Good morning. I am Angela Glover Blackwell, and I'm just delighted to be here to talk with you about this important issue at this important time. This is, I was just saying to someone, one of the most exciting times, if not the most exciting time that I have ever seen. Also scary. There's no question that it's uncertain. We don't know what's going to happen in the future. But I am excited because for the first time in my life, all of the issues are on the table and being debated. I certainly was around during the civil rights movement, a girl doing part of it. I came out of college, not into the civil rights movement, but more into the Black Power movement. But as I recall, both what I experienced and what I have learned subsequently, so much of the civil rights movement accepted the way things were organized and really demanded that in existence should be shared broadly. So in many ways, it was a huge and direct challenge to a system that had systematically excluded people based on race. But it wasn't a systematic challenge to the system per se. And so what's interesting now is that everything is being challenged. We're coming out of a time where growth was really fueled by the mirage of a housing bubble, fueled by credit to promote consumption, a financial system that was completely deregulated, and it resulted in loss for almost everyone. Not everyone, some were able to gain, but so many people have lost their security, they've lost their assets, they've lost their wealth, they've lost their jobs, they've lost their safety net. So the one thing that we know going forward is that we have to develop a new way forward. A new way that includes all, and a new way that doesn't continue to create these huge disparities between the haves and the have-nots, because we now know that that is not a sustainable system. I know that most of you here are concerned about health. You're here at the American Public Health Association convening, and I haven't started off talking about health, but I know that you know that what's happening in the areas of stability and assets and wealth and jobs has a lot to do with the well-being of people. I had the honor of being on the Robert Wood Johnson Commission to Build a Healthier America, and it began by talking about how important income and a secure, sufficient income, how important that is for health and well-being. That was the context. The very first recommendation of the report talked about access to high-quality, universal, early childhood education so that every child can begin school ready to learn. That was the first recommendation in a report about how to build a healthier America. And the work that we have been doing at PolicyLink, and this was also acknowledged by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation Commission, moved from looking at the overarching issues of income, work, and education to a notion that wasn't as well accepted at the time of the commission. It's more broadly accepted now, and that is the importance of place, the importance of where you live. Over the course of doing the report, we ended up trying to think about how to present our findings in ways that would catch people's attention. And what we ended up doing was having a series of postcards that actually show different areas of the country to make the point that if you tell me your zip code, I can tell you your life expectancy. That where you live is absolutely correlated with how long you live, but also how well you live while you live. And there's no group that recognizes this more in the reality of their lives, if not in their knowledge of what the literature says, than people who are living in low-income communities of color. We are a nation, this was another finding of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation Commission, we are a nation in which for the first time children are not expected to live as long as their parents. Such a sad thing. And so much of this poor health and these poor health outcomes actually is tied with so many low-income families living in communities that place them at extreme risk and disadvantage. Where you live is a proxy for opportunity in America, including how long you live and the quality of life while you live. In too many communities, People are exposed to environmental hazards that make it difficult for them to be able to achieve the health that they need. The housing quality, the air quality turns out to be very bad in low-income communities of color. Too many people, Latino and African American, live in communities in which it's very hard to have access to fresh fruits and vegetables, and we know how important that is for a healthy diet. Too many families, particularly Black and Latino, but certainly not exclusively, live in communities in which it's very difficult to have access to places to get physical activity. Parks, if they exist at all, and Trust for Public Land has documented that you have fewer parks in Black and Latino communities than you have in other places. But if they exist at all, they're likely not well kept, not safe, not well lit, not supervised. Too many children live in communities in which it would be irresponsible for their parents to let them go out front and play. I remember when I was a kid, you know, you came home from school and you played out front until the street lights came on and then you went inside, getting lots of activity, doing double dutch, jumping rope and playing kickball and all kinds of things. In too many communities, parents would be irresponsible if they allowed their children to play outside. And we have too many communities in which there are no jobs, and we know how important jobs are to health and well-being. And even if there are jobs in the region, people can't get access to those jobs because of the absence of public transportation to be able to connect them. Over 25% of Black and Latino families don't have cars. And yet, there's so many communities which are predominantly Black and Latino, of which there are hardly any jobs, and public transportation is very poor. We live in a society in which economic activity has actually been just ripped out of communities. Think how important it is for health and well-being for young people to feel good about their self-esteem, getting that first job, putting groceries in, bagging groceries at a grocery store, working at a cleaner's, working in a shop that fixes cars, all kinds of things that young people used to do. Those things just aren't available anymore. There's no economic activity in too many of our communities, and all of these things contribute to poor health and poor health outcomes. When you think about these issues, we've always thought about them, those of us who have cared about them, and I'm sure you all have. I certainly know of millions of people who have made this their highest priority, and I know thousands who work on it every day, trying to create a society in which all can participate and all can prosper and all can reach their full potential has been something that people have done because it is the right thing to do. People have been pushing and trying to make it happen because they believed in the American promise and wanted to help the nation to live up to its promise. People have worked on this issue because they have come from a place of moral guidance, and they have felt that it is the moral thing to do to create a society in which all can participate, all can prosper, all can thrive, and all can reach their full potential. But we have had a shift in this nation that while all those things are true, there's a new context in which we think about equity. And when I say equity, I mean nothing more than just and fair inclusion into a society in which all can reach their full potential. We know, we've been hearing it, that by 2050 we will become a nation in which the majority of people will be people of color. Since the census has come out, that's been revived, and we now know that that's going to happen by 2042. What is not as well known is that right now, nearly half, 46.5% of all children under 18 in this country are children of color. And when I say of color, I mean Black, Latino, Asian, Pacific American, Native American. All of those groups together represent, and a group that is other, which includes others who are of color. All those groups together, 46.5% of all children under 18 are children of color. By the end of this decade, the majority of children in this nation will be children of color. By the end of this decade, 2019. By 2030, the majority of the young workforce will be of color. And then by 2042, the majority of all people in the nation will be people of color. As we think about that, these issues that we're talking about in terms of the health disparities and the disadvantages that people face in their communities takes on a new urgency. I just maybe 4 days ago, was in Colorado speaking at the luncheon for the Colorado Children's Campaign. It was well attended, 750 people there. The governor was there, the lieutenant governor, the United States senator, and lots of civic leaders and business leaders, community activists. It was the community of Colorado coming out to talk about childhood obesity, and it was inspiring to see the issue get that kind of attention. As I was preparing my remarks, I looked at the data about childhood obesity in Colorado, and I was surprised, though not shocked, to learn from looking at the data that the obesity rates among white children are actually below the national average. But the obesity rates for black and Latino children are above the national average. And so Colorado, as it thinks about the fact that it is slipping from its status of being the thinnest state in the United States, has to face the fact that what's happening to the children of color is driving all of Colorado. And that's why the entire community came out. It's this demographic shift that has taken something that has been a peripheral problem for a lot of people and put it front and center. Because if we don't solve the problems in communities of color, the nation will not be healthy, the nation will not thrive. But if you think about it, what are the challenges? The challenges going forward are how to be able to have a strong middle class, how to be able to be competitive in the global economy, how to deal with the issue of climate change, how to make sure that people are healthy and we stop driving up health costs. These are the challenges. Every one of those challenges comes back to what's happening to people of color. When we look at the health disparities in this nation and we look at our standing, whether it's infant mortality or whatever it might be, if it were not for what's happening in communities of color, those numbers wouldn't look like that. But that is not something that we can push to the side and forget about it. We have to address it, or the nation will not be a healthy nation. That if we want to have a middle class, we know who the future is going to be. We know who has to be educated and prepared to be that middle class. If we're going to be competitive in a global economy, we know who has to be educated and trained, and the entrepreneurial spirit that we have to unleash in order to be competitive in the global economy. I say that America can see its future. It's a 12-year-old Latina girl. It's a 17-year-old black boy. It's a 15-year-old Asian young woman. It's a 5-year-old Native American. It's a poor white child living in rural America. We know who the future is going to be. We know where they are. We know what they need. And the degree to which we invest in them will determine the kind of future that we are going to have. And so this notion of thinking about where you live and how well you live and how long you live is uppermost important. And there's several very clear things that we have to do. We have to be clear about our physical environment. We have to be clear about our social environment, our economic environment, and our service environment, and make sure that they all, in all of our communities, are providing what's needed. When we think about the physical environment, we think about environmental quality and parks and access to regional opportunity. That takes you right into transportation. When you think about the service environment, you think about access to health services, public safety, community and public services that are so important for job training, community colleges, all of those kinds of things. Thinking about schools and youth development programs and child care centers, all of the things that we know are important, we need to make sure that they are in locations where people can access them. When we think about policies that have to do with the physical environment, and you think about parks and you think about all of those issues, transportation and your transportation system looms large. Transportation can connect you to services. Transportation can connect you to jobs. A good transportation system can create jobs. A transportation system allows people to access their faith community, their family community. All of those things come down to what kind of transportation system we have. And we even know when people use public transportation, they're more likely to walk and get physical activity. The American Public Health Association has joined with PolicyLink as part of the Equity Caucus of Transportation for America. And that Equity Caucus is really trying to build a huge tent of groups that don't ordinarily think about transportation. Too long, we have left transportation to people who are building roads, the engineers who are designing them, and we have not brought in civil rights and public health and disability organizations and organizations concerned about jobs and poverty and housing. But all of those things are important. They have all come together as part of the Equity Caucus of Transportation for America, which is the biggest collaboration trying to change the conversation as we talk about reauthorization of transportation, that we make it a people issue, that we get people thinking about how do we make sure that transportation works for people. It improves their health, it improves their access to opportunity, it improves their access to the things that they need in order to complete their lives. All of the things that I've been talking about get back to this title, Why Race and Place Matter. We know that place matters. It's taken a while, but we have focused on that. We have embraced it. But as we embrace that place matters, I want us to also think about how race fits into that, that race matters as well. We as a country don't like to talk about race. We don't like to call it out. We don't like to think that it's still a problem, but it is still a problem. When you kind of have the kind of health disparities based on race, when you kind of have the health disparities based on address, and we know that your address is very much influenced by your race, we have segregated ourselves in housing more than we have segregated ourselves any other way. Housing, schools, they're all very segregated parts of our lives. And the consequences of what we have done when we have placed people in communities that are identifiable, and then we have systematically underinvested in schools, in parks, in jobs, in all the things that make a difference, we get what we have today. The good news is there are so many strategies to make a difference. They are well known. The tagline of PolicyLink is lifting up what works, because we believe you show me any problem and I could show you a community that has successfully solved it. I could tell you stories about grocery stores and parks and schools that are actually helping children to get the nutrition that they need. I can tell you stories about communities all across this country that are doing something different in transportation. Our problem is not an absence of information about what works. We know what works. What we have lacked is the urgency and the public will to make sure that we build a society in which all can participate, prosper, and thrive. We can do it. Now we must do it. Thank you.